This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/hype. Welcome to Hype episode 21. It's our first episode of the new year. Happy New Year, Josh, Marima, and Kyle.
Ooh, Happy New Year.
Yeah. Happy New Year.
Enthusiasm all around.
I think we've reached that point now where everybody stops wishing everyone a Happy New Year and we stop thinking about our fandom resolutions because they've all already fallen to pieces. I mean, we are 9 days into the year.
And my birthday's in 4 days, so I'm just expecting happy birthdays all around.
Happy early birthday.
Oh, thank you.
I got an email from Elfster reminding me of
it. Yeah, me too.
I was like, leave me alone. I don't care about this stupid service until Christmas time when we do
exactly.
Our gift exchange. We should talk about that. What did everybody get in the Hypeable gift exchange? Josh, did you participate? I don't think you did.
No, I didn't.
You're such a Grinch.
Oh, you're such a spoil-sport, Josh.
Kyle, what'd you get?
I got a Doctor Who mug, Will and Grace Season 1 on DVD, and a Doctor Who poster.
Nice.
Yeah.
Marima?
I got this really cute mug from Christina, which is like hand-drawn, and it has Australia on it with a little love heart where I live. And then it has America with a little heart where she lives, and then it has like a plane going across.
That was so cute.
I know.
And a nice year-end gift for you, considering you did that route earlier.
Right. I did. Mm-hmm. I did indeed. What did you get, Andrew?
I got from Louie a Hypeable.
I helped design this. Does that?
Oh, count? Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. It was a Hypeable beer glass. I was actually wondering that. I was wondering if you got any help from like Richard or you yeah. for the graphic.
Yeah, I did the. He wanted a white, I guess it's a white graphic.
Yeah, yeah, it looks really good, too.
Yeah, they could only do one color, I think, so we did white.
And he got me two beers from Wisconsin. They're Wisconsin-specific brews, so, and I've had one of them so far, so. It's fun. The Hypeable staff does a gift exchange and using Elfster, and we can all make wishes for gifts, or we can, just obviously pick whatever we want for somebody, and then we mail it to them, and then once they open the gift, that's when we reveal who was behind it. So, yeah, that was fun this year. So let's talk some news. Actually, just last night, I wanted to mention this. We don't talk about or really cover music much on Hypeable, but Coachella is one of the biggest music festivals, certainly here in the United States. And they announced the lineup last night. Outkast is reuniting.
That's so random.
Yeah, 20 years after their original album, actually. With their original, their first album was Southern Playalistic Adelac Music. All one word. It's bizarre. So Outkast, Muse, and Arcade Fire, a bunch of other artists also participating. I mean, there's like 20 artists a day. Ellie Goulding, Zedd, Pharrell Williams, Queens of the Stone Age, Skillrix, Lord,
which Lana Del Rey?
Yeah, Lana. Her name's Lana.
Oh, Lana, I'm sorry.
You guys are so bad at pronunciation. What did you say? Skillrix?
What is it, Skrillex.
Wow, that's embarrassing.
Calvin Harris, Motorhead, Beck. So, I want to go to this one year, because it's only about an hour and a half, 2 hours away from me.
I totally want to go to this, and I looked up tickets, but it's pricey.
Yeah.
I really want to go to this, but it's like 15 hours from me on a plane.
And it's also become so popular that they've extended it to 2 weekends, April 11th and April 18th. It kicks off.
Oh, and fun fact, Neutral Milk Hotel is playing. So
who are they?
Yeah, they are. And that they were mentioned in John Green's books. I forgot which one, but
oh, okay.
I think it was Paper Towns, I believe.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I mean, it was 1 week and they've extended it to two. It's interesting to me how they get these artists to commit to these 2 weekends, and the artists, I think last year was the first year they did these two weekend setup, and the artists just basically play the same set over the 2 weekends. So there you go. There's the Coachella lineup for 2014. I'm excited, and one day we'll go, but that is not this year.
We're going to continue with today's episode of Hype in just a moment, but first, it's time to remind you that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. It is the internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For our listeners, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. One audiobook to consider is A Game of Thrones, A Song of Ice and Fire, Book 1 by George R.R. Martin. This, of course, the Game of Thrones fandom is huge right now, and whether or not you read the books or you watch the TV show, you probably know this. It's gigantic. People love the story. If you haven't read the books yet, whether or not you've watched the TV show, now's a good time to start, to enjoy the source material before looking at the television adaptation. You can get the book for absolutely free. It is a big book physically, and it is a big book lengthwise if you listen to it. It's 33 hours and 50 minutes. But if you have a daily commute, this is going to be no problem to get through over the course of a couple of weeks. And you'll be caught up before the show premieres in late March or early April. And a nice advantage of having an audiobook is that you won't have to carry around the physical copy, which is actually pretty big if you've ever seen it in a bookstore. And it's just a great way to consume it, because maybe you want to read this big book, but you don't have time to sit down at night and, you know, enjoy it the way it is to be consumed. So a great alternative is to listen to it wherever you go. Carry it around on a device that you already have. Visit audiblepodcast.com/hype. You can get the book for free. If Game of Thrones isn't your cup of tea, then maybe any other book. There's 150,000 choices on Audible for you to choose from. And by signing up for a new account, you can get one book for absolutely free with the 30-day trial membership. Again, audiblepodcast.com/hype. And we thank Audible for their support of the show.
Over to some movie news now. It's been kind of a slow period because we're in between Christmas and New Year's just happened. So all the studios took some extended time off and whatnot. But Jennifer Lawrence, of course, you know, she never stops talking. And she finally explained her Oscars fall and blamed cake, which makes perfect sense for Jennifer Lawrence. She said, "I was at the Oscars waiting to see hear if my name was called, and I kept thinking, cakewalk, cakewalk, cakewalk. I thought, why is cakewalk stuck in my head? And then as I started to walk up the stairs and the fabric from my dress tucked under my feet, I realized my stylist had told me, kickwalk, kickwalk. You're supposed to kick the dress out while you walk. And I totally forgot because I was thinking about cake, and that's why I fell."
That's great.
Yeah. And it plays nicely into her Oscar, her whole night at the Oscars last year was, I mean, we got so many great moments from her, whether it was on the red carpet or afterwards or even during, of course, with that fall. I looked back on it when writing the story, and during her Ryan Seacrest interview before the Oscars on the red carpet, there's this gif of her saying, "I'm starving." So that just played in nicely to this whole cakewalk.
I like the comment. Other GIF better.
Sorry?
I said I like watching the other GIF better, where she gets hit by bread.
Oh, yeah, yeah. PETA hits her with bread. That's why she falls. Oh, the internet. But in related Catching Fire news, the film has now hit $400 million at the U.S. box office, making it the fifth fastest movie to ever do so. But not the fifth highest grossing U.S. film of all time. It's still above 10th place. I think it's now at 13th. it's about to beat, or it did just beat Iron Man 3, which has
400 million. Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, everybody thought that would be the highest. Well, Iron Man 3 was so much higher than everyone else that no one really thought it would get beat. And so I think Catching Fire surprised by not a ton, but by a decent amount.
Would they benefit from moving the movies to the summer?
I don't know how they could benefit anymore. I mean, they fired it so well.
Yeah,
I guess it's possible.
I just, the thrill, the summer blockbuster, kids out of school.
Yeah.
They do always traditionally perform well. I don't know if it's technically better than these November releases do. Of course, Harry Potter and Twilight. Well, actually, Harry Potter started in November and then moved to summer, and that seemed
better. July 15th was the last one.
Right, but the first two movies came out in November, and I know Goblet of Fire did as well. But then the rest of them, I think, were all summer. It's too soon to move this one to summer. They're obviously still filming Mockingjay, but I don't know. Maybe the last one they should consider moving to the summer. Oh, and Deathly Hallows Part 1, right? So Deathly Hallows, yeah. Hallows Part 1 came out November 2010, and then Deathly Hallows Part 2 came out 7-8 months later in July 2011.
Yep.
That was a good idea.
So maybe they'll adjust and do that.
Yeah, they should do that. So that's really, Mockingjay is still filming right now. It's kind of crazy to think that we're only a few months away from Mockingjay. I mean, it's 10 months away, but it's better than the wait in between Hunger Games and Catching Fire. In some other book to film news, The Fault in Our Stars trailer may be arriving February 14th. This is because the director's dad, Don Boone, he's on Twitter, and he's like a super fan of Josh's work, understandably so. He's, he's his father. And he tweeted, 6 weeks until TFIOS trailer hits theaters everywhere. The TFIOS trailer on 214. Another tweet, TFIOS 214 trailer.
Oh, Dad.
Yeah, right? It's a very dad thing. These tweets ended up being deleted because I guess Fox was like, hey, can you take that down, please?
Can you ask your dad to take that shit down?
But it is a legit Twitter account because Josh Boone follows Don Boone on Twitter. And so I guess we have that to look forward to with the Vampire Academy in theaters. I don't know what else is hitting theaters Valentine's Day weekend. I presume a couple more romantic movies.
Yep.
But I don't know if Fault in Our Stars needed to take advantage of the the Valentine's Day.
I don't think it needs to take advantage of anything. It seems like one of the most popular fandoms I've seen in a while.
Yeah, it really does seem that way. And then it's not in this story, but in another story, there was an official still released. Actually, I don't have it in here, but there was an official still released. It's in Hot on Hypeable right now of Hazel and Gus in the Anne Frank house. And there's a little more controversy because she's not wearing her cannula, the thing she needs to breathe because she has cancer. And she's not wearing it, but it kind of looks like she's sweating in these photos because she had just climbed the stairs. That's what happens in the books, and she really struggles to climb the stairs. So I don't know, fans are once again a little nervous about that. And the reason I bring that up is because the poster we talked about on the last episode, the poster, people did not like the tagline, One Sick Love Story. Even Shailene Woodley came out a few days later and said, yeah, I wouldn't have picked that tagline either. We didn't really talk about it on the last episode, I don't think.
Nope.
What do you guys think about it?
I thought it was okay. I mean, it's like, at first I was like, it stuck out. And then after I thought about it for a little while, I thought it was relevant. But I could see how people were offended.
Yeah.
I have a friend who had like some back surgery and some brain surgery as a kid, and like she hates the tagline. She's so offended. Yeah, she's so offended by it. She's like, I really think they could have gone with the class of your choice. And it, like, it makes sense. I feel like there are so many other quotes in that book that you could have used as a tagline. So I don't know why they went with that one.
I really like it.
Do you?
Yeah, I do, because I think it really fits with the book, which is the one of the messages of the book is like they don't treat these people differently just because they're sick. And it's kind of a tagline that's like, yeah, it's a bit mean and it's a bit harsh and it's kind of a dark humor joke, I suppose. But like if they were making a similar joke about someone that didn't have cancer, would anyone care? Probably not. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's funny. So I laughed when I saw it. And then I really didn't think about it again until all this controversy happened. So
John Green had a similar thought. He said that it was something that Hazel would say in the books. And it's not a quote from the book. And I think the reason why he may have said this or somebody else did, the reason they didn't go with a quote from the book is because they're looking to come up with a tagline that appeals to a broad audience, not just the readers. So does it appeal to a broad audience? Maybe.
Well, if you hadn't read the book, like you wouldn't have any idea why that wouldn't be an okay tagline. You know what I mean? Like you have to be a super fan to understand why it's maybe offensive. So if you didn't know anything about it, I think you'd be like, oh, it's a sick love story. Oh, haha, I get it. They're sick. And it's a love story.
That
cool.
That's true. Yeah.
Moving on. Like, I think it sums it up very well.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you don't care about it as much, then you're right. You probably wouldn't even think twice about it.
Right. I think it's clever.
Uh-huh.
So Shailene Woodley didn't like it. Ansel Elgort, who plays Gus, did like it. John Green did like it. So it's kind of like the split. And by the way, we ran a poll on Hypeable asking, do you like the tagline? And out of 800 participants, 77% liked the tagline, while 23% did not. So maybe it's slightly overblown, but it certainly has gotten people talking. J.K. Rowling dropped one more bomb on the Harry Potter fandom after her Fantastic Beasts revelation and her... what was the other one? The Cuckoo's Calling. Her final surprise of 2013 was that she is co-producing a Harry Potter play following Harry's pre-Hogwarts years. And she said in a statement, well, this is the general description from her official Facebook page. What was it like to be the boy in the cupboard under the stairs? This brand new play, which will be developed for the UK theatre, will explore the previously untold story of Harry's early years as an orphan and outcast. Featuring some of our favorite characters from the Harry Potter books, this new work will offer a unique insight into the heart and mind of the now legendary young wizard. A seemingly ordinary boy, but one for whom destiny has plans. Does anyone here like this idea?
I like it. Kinda.
I don't dislike it.
Well, why are you guys okay with a story about Harry's pre-Hogwarts years when all we know is that he's been under the cupboard that whole time?
Well, I like that because...
you gotta do something.
There's like, yeah, there's like a lot of stuff that must have happened. Like, he must have been treated with some sort of like kindness or something. Cause at like some point in his life as a little kid, because anyone who's been like mentally tormented like that for like 11 years would be like really effed up in the head. So I'm like, I'm hoping
that's
that,
what
like,
I was thinking.
yeah, like, I think he'd actually be called a Tom Riddle if that had happened.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm excited to see how he managed to grow up 11 years and not be like, just a like douche. Draco or Tom. Yeah, exactly.
I'm interested how they come up with these ideas and like, do they present them to her and say, well, you know, is this okay? Or, you know what I mean? I'm just interested how that works, because you would think she's probably not just thinking of these ideas. You know, someone else is, and they're just bringing the ideas to her.
To play devil's advocate, and I'm still very skeptical about this whole idea. It's the fact, and somebody wrote this better than I'm about to say it in the comments. It's the fact that all we knew all this time was that his life was very uneventful in the cupboard under the stairs. And that's why we never really saw much about it. And that's why we've never thought about it before, because every indication was there's nothing really happening here. It's just a boring, nondescript life. And okay, so maybe some kind things were happening over those years, but are they worthy of a play?
Well, that's why it's a play, not a musical.
What? I mean, so it's dull? Is that what you're saying?
I feel very like you don't boring. Quite understand how theater works.
No.
I mean, I guess I'm kind of in the middle. Like, I sort of feel like you, Andrew. I kind of wonder why we're supposed to care, because, yeah, as far as we know, Harry was just hanging out with the spiders in his cupboard. Like, cool story. I suppose we just have to trust that if she's writing a play about it,
but
that
she's something. Not.
Well, but you know, if they're she's doing the play, yeah. If they're doing the play, I'm assuming that, you know, she is going to have some kind of approval over the story that they're telling, or she wouldn't be putting her name on it. So there must be something that happened there. I mean, we're at least going to see more than just the Dursleys, because they say featuring some of our favorite characters. Right. That sure as hell is not Vernon Dursley. Someone else is turning up there. But I mean, I'll just wait until I see it. But yeah, I understand the skepticism.
That's the saving grace here. And I wrote about this in an article where I was speculating what could possibly be in this play. I looked back using the Harry Potter lexicon to find out what we do know about Harry's early years. And there's a couple little stories, but nothing really significant. If we get to see Ron and Hermione getting ready for Hogwarts, I think that would be very interesting, because then we would get a look at the Weasley family. We would get a look at how Hermione's parents are dealing with having a witch as a daughter. That could be some interesting stuff and new canon that the Harry Potter fans would appreciate. But out of the three characters, I think Harry's story would be most boring. Maybe we'll get to see how Dumbledore and McGonagall deal with getting letters to the Dursleys' house. I mean, that could potentially be an interesting angle to watch that whole plot line from that we read about in Harry Potter and the Sorcerer/Philosopher's Stone. So
it's really interesting that J.K. Rowling is like expanding the Harry Potter universe, and like a lot of the places that fans are like, oh, this is interesting, but like the Marauders is something that she's like totally like stayed away from like the entire time. And
I know,
like,
it's what everybody just wants.
Exactly. So I'm like, oh, come on.
She did that little short story, but it was really nothing. It wasn't published.
And didn't she say that she wasn't going to do the Marauders because, like, it wasn't interesting and everyone knows how it ends up or something?
Right. Yeah,
and it's like, how is this any different? We've got seven books that know how this ends up. Like,
yeah. She said
surprise,
that.
He goes to Hogwarts. Spoiler.
Yeah. So this seems to be, like, the one misstep so far in terms of how she's handling new Potter stuff. Other than, I mean, Pottermore's... I like Pottermore over this.
Seriously? No, that's way mean. Don't say that. That's way harsh.
Maybe I'm just bitter because I have to go to England to see this. But
oh yeah, that's so hard. I feel so bad for you.
But it's supposed to hit the London's West End in 2015. So hopefully we'll hear more about it this year. Or maybe not. I in terms of what in the Harry Potter fandom I'm looking forward to most this year, it's the Cuckoo's Calling sequel, because I really liked that book. And I know it's not directly Harry Potter related, but a new book from J.K. Rowling? Count me in. Like I said, news is slow in the movie and TV world, so we have a mishmash of stories to talk about today. First of all, Michael Bay kind of went off the handle at CES, the Consumer Electronics Show, earlier this week. He was invited up on stage by Samsung to talk about their TVs, and he was supposed to be following a script on the teleprompter, and the teleprompter wasn't working, so he... grew so frustrated that he actually walked off stage.
It was terrible.
It is so funny, though.
No, I'm just saying it's so awkward.
I'm going to play it once we get past the ad. that's playing. But
I'm watching it right now, and it just looks like,
oh man,
oh, it's hysterical.
And he released a statement after Andrew wrote the story, and it was like he did his lines before the other guy like introduced, or he introduced him, but didn't like talk about his, do his intro, and so that's why the teleprompter got screwed up, was because he actually spoke out of, you know, out of line. So it was actually his fault.
But still, here, let's play and then we'll discuss it.
Okay.
How is everyone today? My job as a director is I get to dream for a living.
Michael, you know, you're known for such unbelievable action. What inspires you? How do you come up with these unbelievable ideas?
I create visual worlds that are so beyond everyone's normal life experiences. And Hollywood is a place that creates a viewer escape. And what I try to do is as a director, I try to...
Oh, that's like watching a car crash.
Tell us what you think.
Yeah, we'll wing it right now. I try to take people on an emotional ride. And...
oh, God.
How does it, how do you think it's going to impact, how viewers experience your movies?
Excuse me, I'm sorry.
Okay.
He walks off stage.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's thank Michael Bay for joining us.
Yes, thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
Like, thank they're you not even this. Asking tough questions.
He's like, what do you do in your job? And he's like, grr.
Yeah, exactly. That's my problem, like, with this. Like, how is he dumb? Like, I, you know, nobody really likes his Transformers movies, so I just, like, these softball questions, first of all, I can understand why he can't answer that curve question off the cuff. The Samsung guy was asking, how will the Samsung Curve TV help, you know, viewers at home with your movies? And it's like,
but that's why they paid him to be there, was to talk about the, you know, why that was going to be integrated into his field. So, I don't know. I feel like he just either didn't have anything planned or just got totally nervous and screwed up. I mean, I think everybody's done that.
Yeah,
with
nerves.
Public speaking.
Yeah, obviously.
Nerves are weird. You know, like, you could be the greatest speaker, and if something screws up, you know, you just blow it.
Especially in a big hall like that. Though I just assume that after, you know, he's walked countless red carpets, he'd probably be good at this.
Oh, I agree. I was surprised. I was like, how can this guy who's basically known for having thousands of people on his sets, how does he not know how to address, you know, a bunch of people?
I think I actually heard that the way that he communicates with the people on his sets is through Morse code via explosions. Explosion Morse code. Yeah.
He is a bullhorn. Like, in every movie.
Yeah, that's true. That's a true story.
Well, let's talk about these curved TVs. I mean, I haven't read up much on these, but this is the new 3D
curvy
TV,
televisions.
Right?
Like, yeah, it's a new gimmick.
Who wants a curved TV in their home?
I'd rather get a 4K TV and just let it be flat and not, like, curvy.
Right.
I agree. But this is why they say it's good. It's because, well, for one, it actually makes it so less people can watch your TV, because you have to sit at the optimal position, right? Because if you're sitting at the sides, then you're not at the, you know, you're curved on one side and you can't see at all on the other.
Right.
And the whole thing is that you can see more without turning your head left or right, because these TVs are like, I think this one's like 105 inches or something like that.
Yeah, I mean,
it was 100 and something, but, the point is, I guess you can see more without having to turn your head if it's curved, but I don't know. It seems dumb.
The one advantage is that I guess it gives you a more cinematic, like, experience, like the movies, like taking up your line of vision.
Yeah.
But.
Well, like, apparently, theater screens are curved. I didn't know this, but, I'd heard that they were, but I've never seen curved ones, but.
Maybe it's just very slightly.
Just
curved.
Slightly. Yeah. Maybe slightly curved.
I think it probably happens more in IMAX theaters, I would assume.
Yeah, I know IMAX theaters are.
Anyway,
this is so dumb.
It is dumb.
It was awesome. I watched it.
To summarize, this is dumb.
Yeah, I mean, remember last year or 2 years ago, 3D TV was like the new thing. But then the problem with 3D TV was that you needed the 3D TV itself, 3D glasses, a 3D Blu-ray, a 3D Blu-ray player, then the 3D Blu-ray DVDs, and it's just too much.
Yep.
They did it to combat piracy, or try to, but...
Well, that failed.
Yeah, I mean...
Immensely.
Yeah, and I... Let's take a poll. Who likes 3D? I don't know if we talked about it on the show before.
No one likes 3D.
And that's a part of the thing. Like, all of the consumers are like, I hate 3D. Why is this happening? And now people are starting to realize that 3D was never a good thing.
Yeah.
So now they're starting to cut down, hopefully.
But they tried to do it because to combat piracy, and you can drive the ticket prices up. In theory.
Yeah, I don't even think it's the money. Like, it doesn't bother me that it's $16 or whatever to see a 3D movie. It's just that it's not any better. You know what I mean? If it was better, I would be fine with it.
And they
dark, and it's the glasses are almost always terrible. Right. Especially my IMAX theater has terrible glasses.
Yeah.
And I just think it's pointless. So yeah. Anytime a movie comes out and it's not in 3D, I always praise it because I think it's good that they, you know.
I agree. It can be really hit or miss.
Yeah. I think with like animated films for you know younger ages, I think it's good.
Some I have to say some movies do it right, but you have to do it right. It's not like a button that people press and oh, there's your 3D, you're done.
Yeah, the conversions always look pretty bad.
But like, I have not seen a single film in 3D that I thought, wow, I'm so glad this was in 3D. Not even Avatar or any of those things. Every single time, I'm like, why wasn't I able to see this in 2D?
Yeah Avatar sucks. Looked just as good without glasses. I was just
also
like,
yeah. Also, like, as the token person with glasses, it's so annoying to go and see 3D movies.
Yeah.
John,
I have to say though, John and Hank Green invented 3D to 2D glasses. John Green.
Wait, what?
Yeah, Hank Green.
Please explain.
Yeah, it's okay. So it's like you can go on DFTBA Records. You can buy the 2D glasses, $8. 2D glasses allow any real D 3D movie to be viewed as if it is a normal two-dimensional movie. I created them so my wife could see 3D movies with me without getting a headache. Soon I realized that we weren't the only people with this problem, so I decided to make them available online. So yeah, you can go and buy 2D glasses.
So okay, amazing. But why don't they just go and see the movie in 2D? I don't know.
Maybe
sometimes you can't. Like in my IMAX theater, sometimes they'll only show the movies in 3D. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, that's IMAX. So that's the same here.
You can also buy these on Amazon. Hank Green has a great little side business going.
Wow.
73 reviews for these 2D glasses.
How much are they?
Eight bucks. Yeah.
That's not bad.
Okay, so in some other news, like I said, it's going to be a mishmash of movie news today. Scorsese's Wolf of Wall Street has broken the F-word record. F yeah!
Yes!
It had... the previous record holder was Spike Lee's 1999 film Summer of Sam with 435 F-words. It took 14 years to break the record by a massive 71 F-words. Wolf of Wall Street has 506 over the course of the three-hour film.
And they are strategically placed.
What do you mean?
I'm just saying. It's just ridiculous.
That is 168 freaking, like, F-words in 3 hours, in like, per hour.
Per hour.
That's ridiculous.
That is a lot. So you saw this movie, Josh?
Yeah, I saw this movie twice. Really? I went by myself. Well, I went by myself the first time because no one else would go. And then I went with my brothers. And luckily, I did. Sometimes I'll go. My grandfather's a big movie buff, and he's like 87 or something. And thank God I didn't go with him because it would have been very awkward to go, you know, with an older person. I saw older people walking out, like in droves. I saw old ladies walking out. And I mean, I didn't have a problem with it, but clearly they did.
Interesting.
And I mean, I thought it was a good film. It wasn't great. I was expecting a lot more, and it felt long. It did feel like 3 hours, I thought.
Yeah, that's the thing. I am so impatient in movie theaters that I can't go through this hell of a 3 hour movie. But you know, the way the movie was marketed, I'm surprised those older audiences even went into it to begin with, because I think it does give you an impression of what kind of movie it's going to be when you watch the commercials and whatnot.
I don't think they were, just speaking with some people, I don't think they were ready for all the like frontal nudity and whatnot, because that's normally not seen in a rated, even a rated R film.
Yeah.
And we had talked about this last time, I think, was that they had like lobbyist work on getting it from NC-17 to rated R. And that's clearly, you know, apparent here.
Yeah. Well, in some other movie news, Anchorman 2, another movie that came out late December, we spoke to the director, Adam McKay, who revealed that an entire second version of Anchorman 2 with all new jokes, quote, every single joke has been replaced. And apparently, the studio, Paramount or Universal, I can't remember which one it was, they have scheduled it for, they've scheduled it for some sort of release. I don't know if it's going to be going into theaters or they're going to put it on the DVD as an alternate version. But the fact that there's a version with all new jokes is actually really exciting to me because I loved Anchorman 2.
This is why movies cost so much money, though, because they shoot this much footage.
Uh-huh. Did you guys like it? Did you see it, Josh?
I haven't got a chance to see it yet. I really want to.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet.
I thought it was decent. I like the first one better still, I think, just because it was original, you know, but this one was good.
I actually thought it was on par with that one.
No, I heard a lot of people did. A lot of people did.
So, yeah, I mean, I will go into the theater again if this actually goes.
I'm curious if this even happens. It'll be interesting. I mean, to have every joke replaced, it's crazy.
Yeah. Let me find the exact quote in this article. He said about this new version, it's done. I just went in and gave all the last notes on it. It's crazy. It's 350 new jokes. I think there's like 7 jokes we couldn't replace that were spoken jokes. Otherwise, every single joke has been replaced. It's about 10 to 15 minutes longer. Whole new runs and riffs. I can't imagine doing a comedy any other way. And later on, he says that the studio does have it scheduled. So anyway, I'm excited. Anna Paquin's character has been cut from X-Men Days of Future Past. Can you talk about this one, Josh? I mean, it's significant because we've known she was going to be in the movie. And then December 20th, Bryan Singer's like, yeah, we had to cut her.
Well, essentially it means that she didn't have a large role to begin with, which is kind of sad because she was a fairly big part of the first two films. Which I guess they're just running out of time slots because they have so many mutants in this film. And it's a bummer, but I mean, if she was only coming in for a short amount of time, then the scene probably wasn't that, you know, that she was probably just in it and then out, kind of like, Hugh Jackman was in First Class, where they come in, he says F off, and then they leave. That was probably not, you know, that's not what her scene would be, but that's probably what she was doing. And they cut that scene out and that was it. It's weird because you would think that they'd want to use her because she has a fan base now from True Blood. But I guess maybe she was too expensive or something, because they're not paying everyone their normal raise in this film. They can't, because there's just so many, many actors.
They already shot it. So, I mean, whatever she was paid was still paid, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I just meant her time was limited. For whatever reason, whether they wanted her or not, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So either it was her, she couldn't do it, or they didn't have her written in that much. But
yeah,
I guess a lot of people were bummed out just because she was a kind of a fan favorite back in like the late 90s, when the first X-Men was like the first comic book movie to do well.
And she was there at that Comic-Con panel with every single mutant actor or actress was out there. That was crazy. That was a giant table, and that sort of said it all. Like, there's so many people there. How could you include all these people and give them their proper screen time?
Yeah, I'm just curious how it's going to be, because you can't fit that many people on screen. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Over to some other movie news. Veronica Mars, the trailer was released, and I this is like the second one, right?
No, it's the first official trailer that they've released since announcing, or first feature length trailer that they've released since announcing the Kickstarter. It was just really interesting because the Kickstarter was announced like almost a year ago in March. And so it's like the first feature film to like come from a Kickstarter.
Oh, right.
And like, yeah, a whole bunch of people are really excited about it. Plus it's like continuing a TV series. Its own kind of like plot line. So I thought that was really interesting. And a lot of fans are excited.
So does this trailer live up to anticipation?
Well, I'm not a Veronica Mars watcher, but as a non Veronica Mars watcher, I watched the trailer and it looked really good. Even from someone who like has no idea what Veronica Mars is about. Mm-hmm. If you watch that trailer, it sounds really interesting.
And I'm not allowed to watch the Veronica Mars trailer because I'm in the middle of watching Veronica Mars for Rewatchable, and we're only into the third season, and the trailer has spoilers, apparently. Oh. Yeah, so...
Sorry to hear that. Have you looked into how it's going to be released in Australia? Is it going to...
Oh, the film? It doesn't even have a release date yet. I haven't seen a release date outside of the US, actually. So, I don't know, like 2018 or something. We'll see.
2018.
I'll let you guys know.
You should just buy the DVD, I think.
Maybe it'll still be running when I get over there in the middle of the year.
Oh, that's coming out March. Soon.
Yeah, it's really soon, actually. What's the exact release date?
It's March 14th. So, it's almost a year exactly from when they did the Kickstarter.
Mm. That's pretty impressive.
That is impressive, really.
Well, yeah,
and worrisome. Normally, stuff takes a lot longer than that.
I hope it does well just because of the whole underdog perspective of it.
I just want to see some other films do this, or some other people do this.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I just, like, is the quality going to be there? It just seems like, I feel like Kickstarter has tarnished its image. I guess I need to watch this trailer.
Well, the trailer looks like a legit movie trailer. Like, yeah. It doesn't look hand, like, filmed or anything. Mm-hmm. And it actually looks like just, if you saw it on TV, you'd be like, okay, that's just another movie coming out.
Yeah, I mean, like, Warner Brothers is still just, you know, distributing it. So it's not like it's going to be total shit or look like, you know, junk.
Yeah. So let's go over to TV news now. Doctor Who Series 8 is already filming, believe it or not. It's not going to premiere until August, right? So we have a long way to go. But how does Peter Capaldi look in the role of the Doctor?
So funny.
Old.
So funny.
He looks so funny in Matt Smith's clothes. Oh.
Yes, he does.
Don't you think, Kyle?
Mm-hmm. It's not fitting, I don't think.
I think it looks fine in his clothes. I mean, I haven't
watched
Doctor Who.
You're not allowed to comment.
You guys are just used to seeing a different head on top of that body.
Right.
A younger one.
I mean, I'm excited for Peter Capaldi. I think he's great.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe he'll break the F-word record on Doctor Who.
If only.
Maybe it's just me and... I don't know where I was going with that. But he looks a lot... He looks different than how he's appeared before, right?
I think his hair's lighter. Whiter.
Yeah. It's a kind of funny angle as well, but I know what you mean.
Yeah, maybe it's the angle, or maybe he just has more makeup on his face, but he almost looks a bit younger. He doesn't, I mean, sorry to say this, but he doesn't look as wrinkly as he did in the other promos. Like, in the Series 7 finale.
He got like a huge fan blowing his wrinkles out above him. It's like, we gotta make him look like Matt Smith.
Yeah. And then, I know we didn't include it, but there was a rumor that he and Clara are going to have a little bit of a tiff in the beginning. Mm-hmm.
The relationship starts off really rocky because Clara's like, you're not Matt, like you're not 11. Like, I don't like you. This is weird. Like, and so in addition to having to fight, like, his first monster is 12, he's going to have to make Clara fight with him and get on his side.
That makes sense.
She's bald right now, right? In real life.
What?
No.
No, that's a different actor.
That's Karen Gillan.
Yeah. Oh, is it? Oh, damn. Mm-hmm.
Guardians of the Galaxy?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're talking about the scene in the 50th where, like, Karen Gillan and Matt Smith were both wearing wigs and it was inherently obvious.
don't know what so she funny. Looks similar to me, but I'm not familiar with her. So
it's because we don't watch.
Yeah, we're bad fans.
Since our last episode, the Doctor Who Christmas special aired, and Matt Smith, was it a good send-off, Kyle and Merriman?
No. No.
Nope.
No. What was the main problem?
They did too much, and they didn't focus on the Doctor enough and his character kind of ending his line, like his story arc. Like, Stephen Moffat tried to end all of the different little arcs that he's had and all these little, like, loose ends that he's had since Matt came on in series 5. So having to focus on all of that, he kind of left out the focus of the actual Doctor, I think.
Yeah, it was just a really bad episode. Although I've had really good mileage out of it for writing articles. So.
Yes, Merrima is our resident Doctor Who critic.
Mm-hmm.
I use that word critic strongly.
Yeah, that's accurate.
Sherlock and Downton Abbey. Well, Sherlock has. We're in the middle of Sherlock right now, airing in the UK. It had a huge premiere. It's the series one, series three, episode one ratings. 9.3 million viewers in the UK. That doesn't even count all the people who have been illegally downloading it over the world, because they want to see it and not be spoiled on Tumblr and whatnot, myself included. I have to imagine there's at least, it's got to be about a million more people who are illegally downloading.
Oh, yeah. And there's also going to be like, there's also going to be the people live watching through the BBC's website.
Right. I'm sort of taking that into consideration as well. And Series 3, Episode 2 did, I think, like 8.5 million, so a little less than the premiere, but that's to be expected. And then Downton Abbey has done really well. It just premiered here in the U.S. It shattered its previous record. The premiere episode, which aired this past Sunday, had 10.2 million viewers on PBS in the United States. Compared to last year, the season 3 premiere was seen by 7.9 million, so a big uptick. And I think Downton Abbey, it just really spans a wide viewing audience. I mean, I'm young and I watch it and absolutely love it. And there's a lot of people like me, but then it also attracts an older audience who just really loves, you know, it's made up of a bunch of older characters, and, it's set in the 1920s. So there's that whole thing. I mean, it's just a great show for people of all ages. So watch it if you don't already. And some good Sherlock news. Stephen Moffat says that he and Mark Gatiss, the co-creator, co-producer, he also stars as Mycroft. He says they've already plotted out series 4 and 5, which is good news. I mean, it's to be expected, given how popular the show is right now, that they would be back for series 4 and 5. But yeah, so they're coming back. We know the show's commissioned for series 4. I think it's already optioned for series 5. So there you go.
Yay.
Hooray. I mean, given there's only 3 episodes per season, I think they should add like 1 episode per season.
Yeah. I mean, any more than 3 would be great. Yeah. Any number that's higher than 3.
And at least maybe not in like 2 in the same week. Because, I mean, come on. Right. Spread it out.
Yeah.
Spread the
and
love
we've
a little
waited,
bit.
Yeah, we've waited for 2 years. Oh, you guys haven't waited at all. But I have waited for 2 years for this. And it's all over in like 2 weeks. It's really upsetting.
Yeah. I guess you could just rewatch them a bunch of times.
Yeah, for 2 years. Then we'll be right for Season 4, and coming soon in 2016.
So Battleships is back at Hypeable. Kyle, tell us about this year's tournament, Battleships 2.0.
Battleships 2.0. Okay, so, well, we're taking the runner-ups from last year. Last year, we had a lot of big ships that were left out the main competition because they didn't get enough votes in their nominations. So, like, for listeners who are listening and they have, like, no idea what Battleships is, it's basically we take ships from each fandom, or relationships, rather, and We ask you to select your favorite ship for each show. So, like, for Downton Abbey, Vampire Diaries, you select which relationship on those shows is the best. And then we put those relationships up against each other to see which ships have a bigger fan base and see which ship can get the most support. And this year we're doing runner-ups from last year. So big names like Glee, what's his name? Blaine and Kurt, they're not included in this year's ship. Or Swan Queen, for those people who watch Once Upon a Time, that's not included. So this time it's going to be all the smaller ships. And but if you don't like those ships, like the runner-up for Vampire Diaries was like Stefan and Elena. But if you don't like them, then you can vote them out. And if you get more votes than the people that we've picked, then they take over. Yeah.
Okay, so that is running now.
That was a mouthful.
Yeah, there's a lot to explain. We've laid it all out on the site.
And I promise, it's clear and concise and not confusing at all.
By the time you're listening to this episode, the Downton Abbey competition should be kicking off. And yeah, so Battleships is a lot of fun, and it gets particularly competitive once we get into the fandom against fandom battles. So look forward to all of that. We crossed J.R.R. Tolkien's birthday the other day, and Selena wrote up a great article with graphics. She made her own graphics for this project, looking at some of his best quotes. And we took into consideration that it's the new year, so we thought, you know, let's find some inspiring quotes to kick people's year off right. His birthday was on January 3rd, by the way. So do take a look at that over on Hypeable. We have quotes from J.R.R. Tolkien and his writings in The Lord of the Rings. So it's a cool article, whether or not you have read the books / seen the movies.
Movies don't count.
Especially not the last two.
I know I can count on Josh to back me up on these. Always. That's so great.
Louis did a great article looking at 14 movies we must see in 2014, and I thought we should talk about what each of us are most looking forward to. Don't say Catching Fire, or sorry, Mockingjay. I have to say, this movie, The Monuments Men, I finally saw a trailer for this when I was seeing Her the other day. Uh-huh. It comes out February 7th. The cast is insane. It's got George Clooney, Matt Damon, Kate Blanchett, Bill Murray, John Goodman, Hugh Bonneville from Downton Abbey. I've never seen him in a movie before, so that should be exciting. I mean, this cast is awesome. Like, I'm really excited for this.
Yeah, I remember seeing the poster and thinking it was like comedy, but it looks like a real film, you know, like, yeah, not just a joke.
I saw the trailer tonight and it looks so good. Yeah. I'm like insanely excited about it. The history nerd in me is just like going crazy.
When Bill Murray like flopped over the military like training thing, and he was like, "How is your team in shape?" And they're like, "Yeah." And he just flops over the side. I think he's just gonna be good.
Also, coming up in March is The Grand Budapest Hotel, directed by Wes Anderson, who did what was that summer movie, Moonrise Kingdom. And then we have Captain America, Neighbors, starring Zac Efron and Seth Rogen. Godzilla is coming out. I don't know. Is that an exciting movie?
It looks decent. It's probably not going to be decent.
Right.
Yeah.
X-Men Days of Future Past. Speaking of X-Men, that comes out in May. Disney's Maleficent comes out May 30th. That should be...
That one looks really good. Yeah.
And, of course, The Fault in Our Stars comes out in June. 22 Jump Street comes out June 13th. How to Train Your Dragon 2 comes out June 13th as well.
Yes, so excited.
Yeah, me too. That movie did
such a good movie.
Yeah, you know, every post we do gains a lot of love. Yeah, there's a lot of love for that movie, that franchise. And of course, Catching Fire, Mockingjay comes out at the end of this year. And the next Christopher Nolan film, Interstellar, comes out in November as well.
Guardians of the Galaxy as well.
Yeah.
As someone who has no idea what Guardians of the Galaxy is, the idea looks interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't get it. There's like a cartoon raccoon and something, I don't know, space. Or whatever. I mean, I'll go and see it. Like, don't get me wrong, but I don't understand what it's about or what it is.
There was a trailer at Comic-Con and it hasn't been released online yet. It was funny, and I too know nothing about it, but it just looks great. It's like a I almost want to say buddy cop movie, but with superheroes. The lines are phenomenal. The raccoon, who's voiced by
Bradley Cooper,
it looks awesome. I'm very excited.
But, yeah, they say the director said like 98% of the movie takes place away from Earth. Or like, oh, cool. Not even in our galaxy. So that'd be cool.
I think Marvel may struggle with getting people to see it though, because not many people do know about it. So
yeah, and everybody's kind of covered up. Like Zoe Saldana's in it, but she's all green, and you can't really see her. Mm-hmm. And Chris Pine has a mask, maybe.
Yeah,
or is that his name, Chris Pine?
Chris Pratt.
Pratt. Sorry.
At least in the trailer, I don't remember him wearing a mask. So maybe he only wears it during battles or something.
Yeah, he may not wear it. It's just from the comics.
Okay. And I also wanted to mention, since TV shows, now that we're in January, we're past the holidays, a bunch of TV shows are now coming back. I know American Horror Story Coven just returned last night with a great episode featuring Stevie.
Oh, yeah, that was fantastic. Yeah. That was a great episode.
But other shows that have started up this month already are Castle, New Girl, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Teen Wolf, Revenge, Sherlock, of course, and Dracula. And then over the next 2 weeks, Sleepy Hollow, The Originals, and The Vampire Diaries. Thanks, Kyle, for coming up with that list.
No problem.
So we're getting back into the swing of things here on Hype and here on Hypeable, and exciting things ahead. I'm personally excited for all this Fault in Our Stars stuff. Oh, and Divergent. We didn't even include that in the list of films for 2014.
Or Maze Runner. Yeah, there are a lot of films that aren't on that list, but it was to avoid the young adult adaptation frenzy.
Maze Runner was supposed to come out in February, then they delayed it to August, I think it's coming out now.
I don't remember.
That was a bit disappointing, but they really hadn't marketed it at all. There hadn't been a trailer or anything. Maze Runner now comes out September 19th, 2014. So that does it for this episode of Hype. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I'm Andrew Sims.
I'm Josh Neely.
I'm Tara Kyle.
And I'm Marima White.
Feel free to hit the comments of the post announcing this episode and to discuss the episode and anything we said. And anything we said wrong, feel free to correct us. I'm looking at the comments right now. I see Karen here for episode 20 wrote in, Marima, you can get Netflix outside of the U.S. I lived in Israel and got it for years. You just sign up with a VPN that changes your internet address to one in the U.S.
Yeah, that sounds illegal.
Well, it may be. But
Wait. It's a virtual part of network. I have to, speaking of comments, because everyone kept telling me off for illegally watching, what's it called? House of Cards. I bought the DVD, so everyone can calm down. I own the DVD.
Oh, I just watched it. Wait.
You like it?
Oh, it's fantastic.
Yeah, that's an incredible show. Oh, I cannot wait for the second season.
Oh, so
the trailer was so good, too, for the second season.
It was so good.
Yeah.
Can we just have a whole episode of Hype about House of Cards when that comes out?
Kevin Spacey's the man.
Thinking of doing a rewatch before the February 14th season 2 premiere.
Yeah, I'm going to watch all of them again just because they're so good. I watched them all in one day, so it's not like
I watched half of them.
I probably missed something.
I was like telling my dad, like, you need to watch this. And like, he stayed up all night watching them.
I bought my dad the whole set. Yeah. That's what I got him for Christmas because I was like, dude, I love this.
But Marima, you may have to do this little VPN trick.
It's what I do for Sherlock.
Yeah, I don't know, understand how that works, but someone will explain it to me in the comments. They're very helpful.
I was just going to say for season 2, because the DVD probably won't come out until later this year. So
yeah, I know. So sad. Yeah, well, I'm not waiting till then. No way.
Australia and its first class problems.
It's really tough, guys. It's a tough life.
There's spiders everywhere. You don't get shows for years.
Yeah, it's so hot over here right now. Oh, it sucks.
All right, we'll see everybody next time for episode 22. Goodbye.
Later, guys.
Bye.